In October of 1562, Captain John Hawkins of Plymouth, England, captured 300 people in Sierra Leone in West Africa and sold them in what is now known as the Dominican Republic. He returned home with ships laden with ivory, hides, and sugar. History records this voyage as the beginning of the slave trade for the English. Hawkins' personal wealth from selling people became so substantial that Queen Elizabeth I granted him a special coat of arms that included a slave in chains as part of the iconography. Hawkins was said to be a devout Christian. He would hold worship services on his ship. He required his crew to serve God daily and to love one another. He thought of himself as a Christian missionary, spreading the good news. He would land on the shores of Africa, approach the people harvesting their crops and living their lives, and preach to them of a God named Jesus who loved them. He would ask which among them sought to have this Jesus as their savior. Those who put up their hands were led to his ship and put in shackles, and never saw their families or homeland again. The name of John Hawkins' ship that started the English slave trade, was Jesus of Lubeck, also known as the Good Ship Jesus. In his book, Jesus and the Disinherited, Howard Thurman, a forerunner in black liberation theology, says that too often in history, in Rome, in Europe, in North America, the quest for respectability and wealth has seen the Christian church on the side of the strong against the weak, on the side of the oppressor against the oppressed. He says that a religion that was born of a people acquainted with persecution and suffering became the cornerstone of a civilization and of nations whose position in modern life has too often been secured by a ruthless use of power over weak and defenseless peoples. Again and again, the missionary impulse within Christianity, the call to go and fish for people, has gotten intertwined with an imperial supremacist attitude to civilize and subjugate the so-seen savage, heathen, and backwards peoples of the earth. There is a self-bestowed, arrogant grandeur in this type of colonialist missionary thinking, where the dominant group feels their way is the best way, indeed the only way, that they have all the answers and resources and culture, and are destined to save others out of a paternalistic benevolence. Reverend Graylin Scott Hagler, a black United Church of Christ minister in Washington, D.C., says that proponents of all forms of supremacy, including white supremacy, are exceptionalists, meaning that they believe that they are the exception to the limitations imposed by humanity, nature, and history. Forms of supremacy do not recognize anything more important than itself, and therefore believe all things did not exist or were made possible until they brought it into fruition or discovered it. Reverend Hagler goes on to say that this attitude of supremacy stands alongside ideologies that justify atrocities by citing a higher calling like the white man's burden, manifest destiny, the Christianization of Africans and other indigenous people, and the lust to civilize so-called uncivilized peoples by destroying their cultures and stealing their lands. It must be said again and again, until our throats run raw and our voices crack, that this attitude of supremacy, this arrogance of exceptionalism, this imperialist relationship to the other is absolutely antithetical to the mission of Jesus and the movement he began on the shores of the Sea of Galilee. As Howard Thurman says, Jesus was born into a people acquainted with persecution and suffering. Jesus was a Jew, likely a poor Jew whose earthly ministry was primarily to other poor Jewish people, farmers, laborers, and fishers, people who lived as a small ethnic and spiritual minority in a sprawling empire, people who lived under subjugation from Roman overlords and their vassal civic and religious leaders. To use Thurman's phrase, Jesus' ministry was primarily to those who lived with their backs against the wall. It was to the poor, the disinherited, the dispossessed that Jesus went first to offer a new kind of kingdom, God's kingdom, a new way of life, his way of life, with love and justice as its cardinal points. As we heard here in our service 2 weeks ago, Jesus proclaimed, "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me because he has anointed me to bring good news to the poor. He has sent me to release captives and to let the oppressed go free, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor." Jesus' mission was to bring about a new era of liberation, restoration, and return, where debts are forgiven, slaves are freed, and people are liberated to fully participate in God's world, liberated to engage in real reciprocal relationships across all traditional barriers of difference. Jesus' mission, the one he proclaimed on that boat to the crowds at the lakeshore, the one he called his disciples into, was a mission of freedom. It was a mission of freedom from all forms of oppression and subjugation and slavery. Freedom for those with their backs against the wall. Freedom that comes with wondrous benefit, but also deep responsibility. Responsibility to God, responsibility to each other, to creation itself. It was not, I repeat, it was not the freedom to simply do whatever the heck you wanted. Perhaps, like me, you have been disturbed by the images and statements coming out of the so-called freedom convoy that descended on Ottawa and other cities the past days. Being a Christian, I'm especially horrified by Bible verses being quoted and "Jesus loves you" signs being displayed in the same crowds as icons of fascism, white supremacy, and hate, including Nazi swastikas and Confederate flags. As a citizen, I am disgusted by reports of healthcare workers being harassed, elderly people being afraid to leave their homes, food being stolen from a homeless shelter, the tomb of an unknown soldier being defecated on, the mocking of indigenous culture with drumming and chants of yabba dabba doo. I am disgusted by a statue of Terry Fox being covered in anti-government slogans. The man who ran across this country with one leg battling cancer to support science research. What is happening in Ottawa is not about freedom from oppression. It is about the selfish disdain for health, safety, and well-being of other people. Disdain from the well-being of others, other people. It is the exact opposite of Jesus' mission to love one another. In North America, especially, the face of Jesus, a brown-skinned Middle Eastern Jew who was, as Teresa of Avila says, looks compassion onto this world, has been co-opted and corrupted by a militant, myopic, mostly white movement that it seeks to achieve its own ends through bullying and stoking the fear of the other. We proclaim, until our throats run raw and our voices crack, that Jesus' mission was not about power. His call to be fishers of people was not out of some imperialistic ambition. His was a call of inner conversion, a radical change in the inner attitude of a person, to turn away from selfishness and to see oneself as a participant in a new kind of kingdom. A citizen in the community of the beloved, where each person of creation shines with the light of God. In his book, Christ of the Celts, the theologian John Philip Newell describes an event that happened while delivering a talk in Ottawa a number of years ago. he was discussing the prologue of John's gospel, and specifically the affirmation in John 1:9 that the true light, which enlightens everyone, was coming into the world. Newell invited his audience to watch for the light within themselves, the very center of their being, and to expect to glimpse that light at the heart of each other and deep within the wisdom of other cultures and traditions. At the end of the talk, a Mohawk elder who had been invited to comment on the common ground between this approach to Christianity and the indigenous spirituality of his people stood up. As he stood up, the crowd could see that he had tears in his eyes. He spoke slowly and deliberately. "As I have listened to these things, I have been wondering where I would be today. I have been wondering where my people would be today. And I have been wondering where we would be as a Western world today if the missions that came to us on boats from Europe centuries ago had come expecting to find light in us. What would be different if they came expecting to find light?" In October of 1562, Captain John Hawkins sailed the good ship Jesus to the shores of Sierra Leone and started the English slave trade. 401 years later, white supremacists bombed the 16th Street Baptist Church in Birmingham, Alabama, and killed 4 girls. In the blast, there was strange damage to a stained glass window that depicted the familiar image of Jesus knocking at a door. The entire window survived, except for the white face of Jesus, which had been blown away in the blast. The glass that stood in for a peachy skin color became a gaping hole with jagged edges, allowing unfiltered light to illuminate the tragic scene within the church. As one journalist commented at the time, the window displayed the cruel radiance of what is. COVID-19 is a global health disaster that has killed over 5.7 million people on this planet so far. It has also revealed the very worst of humanity, the ever-widening cracks in our societies and our systems, the polarization, the intolerance, the iniquity, the past wounds that have been allowed to fester. COVID has revealed the cruel radiance of what is. Light is pouring in, and there are no longer shadows to hide in. We cannot undo the terrible wrongs that have been done in our collective history. We cannot undo the terrible wrongs that have been done in the name of Christ. But out of God's grace and mercy, we can be part of a new journey that begins within us and between us. As a people drawn to the lakeshore, we can answer Christ's call to an inward conversion from selfishness to compassion, from disdain to decency. This is the inward conversion that is needed to make outward change. The Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. preached that God can make good even out of evil. God is able to lift you up, he said. God is able to lift you up from the fatigue of despair to the buoyancy of hope and transform dark and desolate valleys into sunlit paths of peace and justice. Calling from his boat on the Sea of Galilee, Jesus invites those who would be his disciples on a new journey. an outbound, unbound, horizon-bound journey to build a new kind of kingdom, a new beloved community where everyone is valued and has the freedom to live in dignity. A community that journeys through this world seeking the light within us, around us, and expecting to find it in others, even those who are different from us. For those who would be his followers, he calls us to build a community of kindness and conviction that stands up to all forms of oppression and subjugation. We proclaim until our throats run raw and our voices crack that Christ's ongoing mission is not about power, but participation. The good ship Jesus is one where everyone is empowered to row together so that everyone may reach safe harbor together. In a moment, we will hear a song written by our own Ben Stein and sung by guest soloist Laurel Tubman. It imagines a seemingly ordinary event of a young black woman taking a journey not on a ship, but on a streetcar. What makes this journey unique is that it happened in New Orleans in 1867, shortly after the end of the American Civil War. Up until that time, black people were allowed only to ride on infrequent and overcrowded streetcars with a black star displayed in the window. After the war, black people, along with some white Christian allies, started to advocate for desegregation in the South. Even though the establishment pushed back with violence and Jim Crow laws, and desegregation was not fully realized for another 100 years, small acts of resistance, like boarding a streetcar, paved the way for a fuller participation in life for all of God's children. This now is I Stood Tall. Thank you.
before I was born. He got a busted belly from the hate and the scorn. All of those times he had to swallow his fear, just cut him to pieces year after year. Every time Emmy told me, now it may sound strange, I never stopped hoping.